Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, you've been holding out on me. You have a secret that you haven't been sharing with me.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me what it is, because it's only by accident. We have no secrets.
Well, when the announcer comes on to say that I was the first person on the Super Call,
okay,
I was told to wait for the others to actually join the Super Call.
Oh,
and I realized for the first time that there's more than one Dean Jackson.
Oh, that's so funny.
So this is interesting. Yeah. So there's one Dean Jackson on the call with me now, and there's another Dean Jackson doing this, and another Dean Jackson doing that. Very, very interesting.
I sent you an article from the New York Times with a link to. If you don't have it now, that's fine. But the website, you know, there was, I mentioned to you a while ago when I first heard about this, there's a website called thispersondoesnotexist.com.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to thispersondoesnotexist.com, you're met with a full screen photo of a person that does not exist. It was created by AI from an amalgam of millions of images that it then creates a unique one that does not exist. And there's now a marketplace for these where you can dial in what you're looking for. You can create the attributes, you can create the, you know, eye shape, eye color, eye skin tone, ethnicity, hair, everything that you want. You can create all of it, and you can buy a royalty-free ownership of this digital likeness that you could use in, you know, stock photography for your ads, for your whatever it is. You know, you can basically, and what was amazing to me was you can buy them one at a time, or you can buy 1,000. And I thought, what an interesting thing that you could create an army of digital who's that don't exist. You know, I just think like there's so much that we don't even see yet that's going to shape what's happening now. Like I've been looking back on the last, you know, 25 years and looking for the vector changes that, you know, were unseen earlier on. Like, it's kind of funny to me that when I look back at the path of if I take the last 40 years kind of thing, that a lot of it seems like everything happened in sort of, you know, 4 or 5 year chapters, that the next chapter was sort of unknowable in the beginning of the previous chapter, that, you know, who knew what this was going to, you know, who knew when I left high school in Georgetown and moved to Florida to pursue tennis, that, you know, 4 years later, I would meet someone who, you know, gave me an immediate like sense of insight, which sent me back to Toronto and started me on my real estate career. There's no way for me to have known that when I started out on the path there. And then I would never have known that starting in, you know, 1998 or 1988, that, you know, by 1997, I would be living in Florida. And, you know, there's just, it's really, it's interesting. And even then, had no idea that the internet would be as big as it's turned out to be. You know, and so, and the relationships I think that I was trying to think back when I was first exposed to you, and my introduction to you came from, I had a friend and client, marketing client, Alan Kearns, that was, early on in your, in Strategic Coach. And this would have been in, 94, 95, prior to when I first joined Strategic Coach. But he owned a company called Talent Lab, and they were, they did executive search stuff. He owns a company now called Career Joy. But, just a super guy. And that's how I got to, I came to meet him at one of his, after one of his workshops, or meet him at your office after one of his things. And that's when I was first introduced to you and picked up my first cassette and book program of How the Best Get Better.
Yes.
And that started the whole path, because I introduced that then to Joe Stump and Jerry Ballinger and Terry Hunnefeld, and then we introduced it to Joe Polish, and how it all the little seeds of things unforeseen,
But as far as my physical makeup and everything, if I held it pretty constant over
You really have. Like, I mean, you have really stayed in a band of the same. It's been amazing. Have you tracked how much fluctuation has there been in your weight in those 25 years now?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same range, but the composition changed kind of in the wrong way for a number of years. When you get your body comp between muscle and everything else. So I've done a real effort for the last 10 years, but I would say since COVID started, I really put an emphasis on muscle, and I've just been concentrating on, there's one exercise more than any other exercise that actually does you the most muscle good, and that's squats with weight.
Because you get the biggest muscles, most fiber.
Yeah, well, not only that, but it's the complete coordination of the body, because you're kind of using, you're using a lot of different muscles. You're squatting down, you're picking up the weights, and then you're straightening up. And virtually, it probably uses the greatest range of muscles, and they have to be coordinated with each other, so there's a coordination factor. And I haven't actually done a test. So there's a thing called the body, it's called DEXA body comp, and it's, you lie on a, on a flat bed, and a camera comes over you. Actually, it's like an MRI.
A DEXA scan. Actually, I've done that actually.
Scan. Yeah. DEXA body. It's called DEXA body comp. And, it's pretty well the most accurate one, and I know it's the most accurate one because it's the most expensive one, and it requires a it actually requires a physician, a trained, either super trained technician, or it requires a physician to do it. So the biggest thing when you get older is muscle loss, and the vast majority of people may have been active when they were children, when they were teenagers, when they were in their 20s, but around 30 people stop being active in the same way. They don't have the range of movement, they're not doing they're not playing games, they're not doing that, and their life kind of gets into just a kind of what they do when they're working, you know, going to work, and then what they're doing when they're not working. And so they're not really putting much stress on their body, but gravity doesn't care.
Right.
You know, yeah, gravity just wants you. It knows that it's going to win eventually. It's just how long it's going to take to pull you down into the earth. Uh-huh. And so I started with free weights. So there's a weight in each hand. It's not a barbell. It's a free weight. So I started in March with 40 pounds in each hand. And over the course of an hour, alternating it with elliptical, cardio, and other things, I would do 50 reps with these weights. And today I did it with 140 pounds. So I'm up 30 pounds in each hand.
Wow.
And I'm just about ready to order two 75 pound weights, because that would be 150 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm doing, I'm not putting this down as a goal, but I said, I wonder if one day I can get on the scale and see what my weight is. And that day I'm also lifting squats equal to my body weight. So it's sort of it's not a serious goal. It's just,
right.
I say it's sort of intriguing. I've been moving towards it. And,
sure.
But I feel really good. You know, I mean, muscle feels good when you exercise it. And,
mm-hmm.
So if you looked at me when you first met me, I would probably look in better shape than when you saw me in 1994, uh-huh. 95. Yeah. And it's not an option when you know, at my age at 76, it's not really an option. You get up, you do your exercise. I mean,
right.
It's out of the realm of decision or choice now. It's a habit. You get up, you do it. Some days I do less, some days I do more, but I always do something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Generally speaking, I'm really top notch for my age. I mean, I always say, don't compete with other human beings until you're in your 70s, and they're in their 70s, and then you've got
right. That's a stack the deck right there. I love it. That's funny.
You get the 70-year-olds are easy.
Yeah, you're dominating the dojo. Now that you're 75 plus 76.
That's
funny.
Just compete within your class. Eight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's other factors, I'm actively working and actively creating and collaborating and everything like that. And that all plays part of, I want to have the energy to do the things that I enjoy most in the work world, including podcast with Dean Jackson.
He was one of those for sure.
Yeah. Can I tell you something? My cartoonist, Hamish McDonald, has been using that made up person face for about a year and a half now as the model for his cartoons. So what he said is, I don't want to be competing. I don't want to be constantly repeating the same faces from one book to the other. So I'm going to create new people, and I'm going to take their faces and I'll make a cartoon of their faces. So every one of his books, these are different cartoon faces, which are taken from made up people.
Yes. I just think, when you look at it now, that these made up people that will be able to, plant with an AI that is all of your, all of our thinking, and send it to work to do things with, deep fake, all the deep video technology, that it can, present itself and speak words that have come from everything you've said or I've said,
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's so much
Yeah, it was really interesting because I was talking to Peter Diamandis about that. I did a podcast with Peter. And for those new on the call, Peter has an organization called the XPRIZE, and he's invested in many other high-tech companies. But we have a collaboration between his company and Strategic Coach for a program called Abundance 360, which we're now... in December.
Will this be year 10?
In December of 2021 was the very first session we did, and we did that in Silicon Valley at an organization called Singularity University. And then and we did our first one, and it was kind of a made up on the run kind of thing. And then based on the first experience where we had about 50, mostly coach clients, or about 35 coach clients there. And so we talked, and I said, you know, if I'd had 6 months to think about this, we could have doubled or tripled the size of the group of people. So we put our heads together, we created the organization, and I just wanted it as an extra component of Strategic Coach that those entrepreneurs in the program who are very interested in the frontiers of high technology and new things that were happening would have a structure, but I wouldn't have to create it. Peter would create it. And what I would do is that I would market it for him so that a sizable portion of each of the, it's an annual thing for 4 days, and just having discussion, and right now Los Angeles County, where he lives, you can't do a 4 day live session under any circumstances. So we're looking at that, but other counties you can. You could do it in Orange County, south of Los Angeles County. You could do it north of Los Angeles County. And who knows what it's going to be, but it's close now. It's usually the end of January. And so I said, well, you know, you always, during these days, you always have to have a plan B. And I said, I would just do the plan B. But even if it were live, it would be half live. There'd be 180 out of 360 who would be present, and there would be 180 that would be virtual. And I said, well, we've got a plan for, you know, we've got a plan for 100% virtual, you know, just as a backup. And then there's going to be 6 modules throughout the year. There will be like a 3-hour workshop every 2 months throughout the year. So, which has been adapted.
Yeah, since, I enjoy it. I mean, I've gone 2 or 3 times, and I've streamed all of the other times, which I find enjoyable. I like that a lot. You know, I really.
Well,
like
I went. I could not tolerate streaming 4 days in a row for 6 hours each. You know, I mean, I would get a doctor's note that says I can't do that.
He's allergic.
No, it's an ADD thing. It's an ADD. Well, it's an ADD thing, you know. And, I Genius Network, I can do 2 days, but that third day, you know, I just can't do it. You know, I
agree. Yeah, I get it.
I'm kind of worn out. I'm kind of worn out. And, plus, my mind is doing all sorts of things with the value that I've created for the, you know, from the first 2 days, and I'm off and running on new things that I want to create out of the experience. But I just want to follow through real quick. So Peter is involved. First of all, he collaborated with Evan Pagan, and they created this news source, which is called Future Loop.
Yeah.
And what it does, it interviews you, and then it starts, it has an AI component, AI being a really fast computer. That whenever I hear the word AI, I say, really, really fast computer, you know. It does a global search of things that you're interested in, and then gives you 100 a day, and then you keep fine tuning it saying, well, I like these, didn't like that, more of this, less of that, and everything else. And gradually mm-hmm. over the period, so I've signed up for a year to experiment with this, and he's got mm-hmm. he's got a first in offer, you know, a lower price than what he's eventually going to charge. And I'm really interested in it, and for what it does to my brain, constantly fine tuning. It's a bit like Pandora, you know, like
yes.
I mean, it's the same thing. I've got you know, on Pandora, I have a series of, you know, things that go on for 2 or 3 hours where I've done thumbs down on everything I didn't like and thumbs up on everything I did like. Mm-hmm. And as a result of it, but Pandora gets to know me. So if I mm-hmm. choose another thing, it already has pre-knows that I don't like real harsh horns, you know, mm-hmm. And I don't like music that isn't music. I don't like music that's noise, you know. Mm-hmm. It's got to have a melody, you know. It's got to have a melody, and everything. So I think probably it's the same way with, and these will be articles, and mm-hmm. So I'll be getting articles back, and my mind will, you know, respond to some of them and my mind won't. So I'll use my mind's response to say, don't give me any more of that. I'm not interested in that. Give me more of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited about that. I didn't know they were ready to launch now, but I've known about it for a long time. I mean, they've been doing it a few years in terms of like finding, you had, you know, I think Evan had a couple of people just doing finding for a while. They would find, you know, 3 or 5 things a day and just post it up. But
And then I'm going to share it with the clients, mm-hmm. you know, with the strategic coach clients, but I'm only going to share things that support intellectual shortcuts in strategic coach.
Right.
In other words, if there's some research which tells you why a strategy circle works, or why an impact builder works, or why free focus and buffer days work, and everything else, then I'll give them supporting evidence, and you know, we'll see where it goes. But it's going to be interesting, me just interacting with the program. You know, I'm interested in seeing. Well, anyway, Peter says that they're also doing voice now, where there's a thing which will take your voice, and it'll keep fine tuning so that other people write something for you, my team, for example, and then they take the written word and they feed it in to my voice things, and I say it, and it sounds like I'm actually speaking what someone else wrote.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, we'll see. It's worth experimenting. I mean, we already got something in our house that looks like that, and you do too. It's called a mirror.
right.
Yeah, people have said, you'll be able to look and you'll be able to see yourself. And I said, yeah. I had an early experience of that. I think the first time I thought that was interesting. I was about 5 years old, and it was 1949. It was called a mirror.
Oh, that's funny.
And I learned things. So I had a better one side was better than the other, and
But I think there's something to do that.
Get over your acne as fast as you can, because it doesn't look good in the mirror.
Yeah. The whole, but I think there's a big future for that sort of contextual curation, you know, where you're looking at everything that supports the intellectual shortcuts of the strategic coach environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that same way about the 8 profit activators that, you know, having, when you've got a context like that, and you can set the tone for the master curation, I think that it goes a long way.
Well, you've already tested on hundreds and hundreds of people. You know, I mean, yeah. The thing is, I was talking to Ben and Tucker, and a little bit with Reed Tracy. He's the the publisher of Hay House,
yeah.
The book in that how, which I think is safely at this point with just ebooks and hard copy is over 100,000. Then you have probably another 25%, which are Audible downloads.
Yeah.
So probably with just the ebooks, we're at 100,000, and then probably another 25,000 that are Audible. So we're
that's awesome.
It's really great, and
I've collected the set. I've got all of them. I've got a hard copy, Audible, and Kindle.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and anyway, they were saying, how instantly the Who Not How thing took off. And, we were saying, why was that? And I says, well, first of all, it was a tested idea, And I have a feeling a lot of books, the author comes up with an idea and then it develops the idea in secret and then publishes it.
Yeah.
But it's not really been tested. It's been tested on 22 to 29-year-old, mostly white, affluent graduate students who are being paid to take the test,
Yes.
I said, we test on outliers. I said, every yours and mine are tested outliers. The clients who sit in on profit activators and on, strategic coach. These are people who are only interested in ideas that can be very quickly implemented,
mm-hmm.
and it produces success. They move forward. It's an intellectual shortcut.
Yes.
It's an intellectual shortcut, and I think that's a big difference. And the other thing is, I'm not, neither of us are doing it so that then out of our publishing success, maybe we can create a program out of this.
Mm-hmm.
We've already created the program.
That's exactly right. Yes.
That's where the idea came from. So
yes.
the back end, if you call it that, has existed for years.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I know that when you take now what Future Loop is going to do when you are looking for things that support those, and also given your preference for discovering things, because we've talked about that before, that your preference for you want to discover things. It just feels like having the, contextual curation as a supplement or a jumping off point that you can then explore those threads or along that path.
Yeah.
That would be an intellectual shortcut, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And then you get new ideas. I mean, you get,
Yeah.
So it's always, going back over stuff I already know has proven to me that it doesn't have a lot of value as generating new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want some fresh stuff, When I came across, this is, just two days worth of reading on the internet. And there is a website one website I go to, which is free, and mm-hmm. it's you have to punch it in on the URL to get it. It's called Eon, so it's AEON, Eon, okay, mm-hmm. and it's Eon.com, AEON, mm-hmm. and they update it every day, and it's either essays or it's articles, or it's videos. And they're free. They're absolutely free. and then they hit you up for money every once in a while. But I'm just going to scam. You know, I said,
You're a freeloader.
Talk to Bill Gates. Talk to Steve Jobs. I said, they got billions and they don't seem to have much purpose. So hit them up for some money. But two articles in 2 days, and one of them was that in the why Europe was so different from the rest of the world. Why did Europe take off like a rocket? You know, which it was kind of like nothing in terms of world history, and then all of a sudden, 1400s, 1500s, Europe takes off like a rocket, and you know, everybody's got an idea that they think explains everything. And what I've discovered is that everybody might have an idea that explains one thing. Doesn't explain everything, but it explains one thing. But this author was kind of a really, really interesting thesis, and that is that Christianity, more than any other religion, put an absolute prohibition on marrying relatives. Okay, and this started around the year 1000, that you didn't marry relatives. You didn't marry family members, but you didn't marry cousins either. You married strangers. And this went on. So he said that people had to go out and meet new people, strangers. You know, they had to go out and meet strangers. You could only marry a stranger. Stranger in the sense that it wasn't a member of your family, you know, and you couldn't have children. Biologically, it's totally 100% sensible because you don't get, you know, watering down of genes and you don't.
Were they marrying family up to 1,000?
Well, yeah. Well, look, you lived in a village of 200 people and you didn't.
I guess.
You know,
yeah.
And it was out in the middle of a forest and. Who did you marry?
Okay.
yeah. And strangers were dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. And nobody had been more than 10 miles from home in their entire lifetime, you know, and that was,
okay.
That was a dangerous trip. But then all of a sudden, this whole notion of strangers, you know, the meeting of strangers became a valuable activity. And this went on for about 3 or 4 centuries, and this has been an absolute prohibition in Western society. You know, is that you don't genetically mix with someone in your own, you know, in your own gene pool. You know, you bring in new genes. But so that's one idea, and the idea to me was that this really contributed enormously to commerce. It increased the possibility of trade. It increased the possibility of new ideas coming somewhere. Just this one prohibition had nothing to do with money. It had nothing to do with, it had nothing to do with commerce or anything, but it had a huge impact on those. So that's one idea. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. The other idea was a story, and it's pirates who went back to school. And so in the 1500s, you started getting a big jump in seamanship and the boats to go along with it. They started learning all things about the waves, and, you know, and a lot of it was for warfare. They had, you know, they were trading boats for warfare. And there was this one pirate who injured himself. First of all, he was shot. And then he fell from, he was up in the mast and he fell and he broke his arm, but he wasn't captured and he got back to port and he went to a school of mathematics in France. Okay. He was a French pirate and he started realizing that the key to long-term navigation was, you know, trigonometry and understanding angles and understanding and then
being aware of where the stars were and that you could do various angles from the stars. And then this became a big rage in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s of everybody who is a seaman, that if you knew math and you knew, geometry, you knew trigonometry, and you knew the heavens, you knew the star maps, and you knew where the planets were going to be, that your promotion, first of all, your success and your promotion was dependent upon trigonometry. And it was just this rage through, and Europe just has a lot of seacoast, and all the countries, with the exception of probably Germany, it wasn't a big craze in Germany, but Italy, Spain, Portugal, France, Holland, Denmark, and the UK. The UK is totally an island country. It just became a rage that you kids, 6, 7, 8, 9, who wanted to go to sea, first thing they did is they learned math. And then that went on for a couple of centuries. And then with the 1815 is an important year because that was the end of Napoleon. And from that point forward, there was no big warfare until the First World War. The biggest war between was the American Civil War. It was the American Civil War, which was a land war. It wasn't really a water war. And I was just saying how much, if you take those two things now, you take the prohibition against marrying family members, and you take tens of thousands of sailors crazy about geometry and trigonometry, and then at a certain point, that doesn't matter anymore because they've got electronic, they've got mechanical instruments now that do the measuring. So where's all that talent go? It goes into the marketplace,
And what did they wonder where, what do you think that was the seed for them? Where did that talent go?
Well, if they couldn't use their math with sailing, but they knew their math, they did it on land-based things. Knowing all this, went into manufacturing, the measurement, precise measurements of things,
and engineering
and everything else. But it wasn't developed for that purpose. In other words, it was a strategic byproduct. But it wasn't happening anywhere else in the world. No, it just happened. Mm-hmm. This weird thing about the religious prohibition against, I forget that it's called, there's a name for it, but it's prohibited that you don't want any mixing of genes from family members. And then the other thing was sailors being passionate about mathematics.
Yeah.
And you put those two things together, and then you have like Gutenberg printing and, everything else. And all of a sudden, all these river streams start to merge with each other. So it goes back to the beginning of, beginning what you're saying. The people who invented this thing where you can create people, and I've seen them. They're very realistic people.
Of course. Yeah.
But, it's not such a big deal after you say, it's created and everything else. But when you're out and about, you see hundreds of people who are created and you don't know how.
It's true. That's exactly real three-dimensional people walking around. Yeah.
Yeah. God, I don't know how they ended up with that one, you know?
Yeah.
What was going on? What were they thinking when they created that one?
yeah. But now you can see just in how easy it is to create these digital ones. It opens up a whole new world for how you can imagine that all of these real ones were created,
Well, I think probably people will play around, they'll mix they'll mix races, they'll mix this and everything else, and probably does something to their brain that probably all of us are a bit of this, a bit of that, and anybody who claims sort of like racial purity or anything else is
I mean, they show the things where you can take ethnicity and gender and you can slide the same chassis all the way to the female side and see what that person looks like, and then slide it on a gradient all the way to the male side and see the same, characteristics or whatever expressed as 100% male.
Yeah.
And everything in between, a sort of more feminine looking male or a masculine looking female. And it's pretty fascinating that New York Times thing. They built this engine for that. It's a really interactive article that I sent you the link to, so you'll have fun with it.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about it is that a company is going through diversity training. Okay, so we have a client who goes to workshop in Chicago, and he's created this whole program, and he's got extensive corporate experience. And, he's African-American, but not really. I mean, his father comes from Africa, and his mother, got a whole bunch of hybrids, and he ends up, but he's considered black. You know, why is a person who's half white considered black? You know, I mean, that's an interesting thing, because Obama, take a look at Obama. Obama, the first black president, I said, yeah, but he's half white. Why do you call him black instead of white? Why do you call him?
Right.
Why is that? there's really actually no basis for saying it one thing or another, except that white, socially, culturally, ethnically, in a certain place, is better than being black. But anyway, our team really went through a lot of turmoil with the riots and the Black Lives Matter, and they said we want to have diversity training. We said, well, we want the person who does it to know something about strategic coach. So, and this person came forward, and he's a great guy. He's born in Michigan, and, he spent about 10, and he's done well. He's entrepreneurial and everything else. And he had to meet with me and Babs and talk about things before we get to go over it, but it's going to start in February.
Uh-huh.
And I told, he says, do you have any problem? I said, I don't have a problem with it. I said, I don't have a problem with discussing anything. And I said, I'll tell you, I've given this a lot of thought over 30 or 40 years. And I said, you know where it ends up for me? And he says, where? I says, unique ability. The only thing that really matters is unique ability. And number two, the only thing that matters behind unique ability is unique ability teamwork. And I said, there isn't any other distinction you can make about human beings that's better than those two things.
Yes. That's, that makes a lot of sense. That is what it really comes down to, isn't it? I mean,
I don't care what color, I don't care what shape, I don't care about anything.
Right.
What can you do? What can you do that's unique? What can you do that's unique? And can you put it together with someone else's unique? I mean, can you combine your uniqueness with someone else's to create something entirely new?
Yeah. Because it is, I mean, especially when you're talking about the results economy, you know, when we're talking about creating a creating value, creating a result in the economy, in the marketplace, that's really really what it's about, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really, really interesting. And, you know, about this, and, you know, I, you know, I, because I, you know, I mean, both of us have moved across borders. We've lived in different cultures and everything, and we're largely entrepreneurial. You know, almost our entire adult existence is entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I said, the only thing that matters is talent and teamwork, you know?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's, well, that's interesting. So what form will the training
well,
take?
Well, it's workshops. It's workshops. Okay. But it'll be, you know, it'll probably be, I mean, it's Zoom right now. It'll be Zoom, Zoom workshops. And he's got exercises and everything. And, you know, people want to know, is Dan for this or Dan for that? Because they got really, you know, that, you know, at the time of the riots and everything in June and July, and, you know, and they had a whole series of meetings, and then together they put together a letter that we were going to send out to all of our strategic coach. you know, and they use the words that the U.S. The strategic coach is an anti-racist company. And I said, nope. I won't sign off on that. I said, nope. We're an entrepreneurial growth company, and I said, we're not an anti anything. We're an entrepreneurial growth company. And I said, nope. And there was a real, like, internal, you know, Dan won't sign. I'll sign off on anything else, but I won't sign off. And I said, I looked at the ownership of the company. It's 50% Dan, it's 50% Babs. I'm the owner of the World Strategic Coach. And we don't agree that you can attach another term to our company. I'm not anti anything. I don't see being anti as a useful concept.
Right. This is an interesting, you know, conversation, because that's, you know, even though it is a unique teamwork, there still has to be someone who has that kind of position to be able to say, no, that's not what we are.
Yeah. Before we had our associate coaches, we experimented with having licensed coaches for strategic coach. Mm-hmm. And these were people who already had some sort of thing going out in the marketplace, and we would license them. And one of them was deeply, you know, committed to Christ. You know, he was a fundamentalist Christian. Okay, and he was in Ohio, and he sent out a letter that got sent to us, and there was on the postmark on the letter was Entrepreneurs for Christ.
Oh my goodness!
And we phoned him up, he was using the Strategic Coach trademark, and on the postmark it said, Entrepreneurs for Christ. And I said, you got to take that postmark off. And he said, well, this is my belief. And I said, yeah, but it's my company.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we're the 100% owners of that trademark, and we will not allow. And, I said, and it's not about what you believe in. It's about anything other than that the Strategic Coach logo is not associated with anything else, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
And that was the end of the relationship. He broke up the relationship on that. And, everything like that. He says, well, he said, I'm taking a stand here. And I says, well, you know, I said, look at your contract. It mentions in the contract, it can't be subsumed under anything else. And my feeling is you're subsuming it under something else, and it creates confusion in the marketplace. Can't be anything confusing in the marketplace about our logo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And I mean, it's interesting that everything tries to merge with everything else. And I said, I'm not part of that. You know, I've worked very hard to create a brand and to have it properly structured and everything else. Can't fool around with the brand.
I wonder what it's going to be like, though, Dan, when you can have, you know, this coach does not exist. When you start thinking about creating these, you know, these AI coaches, it feels like that is a possible future here, that somebody could teach a workshop, a Zoom workshop, not immediate, but I mean certainly in the possible future, that someone could in your voice even, or in some other avatar voice, that it creates that
But you know, it's a breakthrough, and everybody does a straight line projection with it. You know, because of this today, it's got to mix with everything else. I mean, when something new exists, it is immediately surprised that there's already a lot of things playing in this field, and so my sense is it's interesting, but. You know, it's kind of like a new Christmas toy. Okay, it's like a new Christmas toy. So I grew up on a farm, and I took sticks and poles and everything else and turned them into guns and turned them into weapons. I created stories around this. I would go into the woods and I'd be Robin Hood, and I'd have my pikes and my spears and everything else. And then in Christmas morning, I get a fandangled new toy gun, and I'd look at it and I'd play around with it. But what I found was that it inhibited my imagination. So after two or three days, I was back to my, it was in a corner and my poles, and I went back to my poles and my sticks. Well, you have a lot of poles and sticks that you've transformed into great value, I understand what you're saying. I was talking to Peter about this, and he says, "What do you think about someone who looks just like you and sounds just like you and has your knowledge base? What do you think about that?"
Yeah,
and he says, "You." And I said, "And he was saying you could." This person could go out and do this for you. I said, I wouldn't even send him out. I would just talk to him.
Right.
I would spend hours talking to myself.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I hadn't thought about it. I said, why would I bother sending him out to talk to other people? I want to talk to him.
Yeah, that's so funny, right?
Yeah, I mean, had another dean You were curating the development of this other dean.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be of interest to you? I mean, in trying to get the other dean to learn something, wouldn't you learn something about yourself?
I wonder, I do think about that, because since Ray has been recurs while you're building a mind, like that whole thing of how do you,
He thinks he is.
Exactly. Right. But you and I've talked about this in the past, that I think that what you, like, I think about how many hours of audio and video there are of me talking very specifically about the before, during, and after unit, and each of the eight profit activators, and how that all fits there, that I would think that you could get, first of all, Basecamp one would be that an AI that looks like me, sounds like me, could, on prompting, you could interact with and have it say the things that I would say up to the moment, everything I've said so far. But I can't, it's not the same then as having the next level of that, right? Which is what, well, what I'm thinking.
Thing. I think you would, by motivating with an up-to-date, up-to-yesterday version of Dean Jackson, I think you would be immediately motivated to create something that yesterday's version of you doesn't know.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean, is that I think it would feel good. I would look at it that would free me up to go forward now, because there's a lot of people who are coming into their first exposure to the 8 Profit Activators and to the Breakthrough Blueprint model. And that they could spend and get a lot of value out of a curated, interactive experience, Dean, of
with
everything
Dean Jackson.
I know about it. Yeah.
And there's things that you've created that you've forgotten.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And you say, oh, yeah, I never remember. I mean, here's the, I was talking to him. He was fascinated. He had never thought about actually that its main use would be you interacting with it. I said, I've got new people in the program, and we have new people in the program, and we have, but I would say, let's just restrict it to our associate coaches, restrict it to our salespeople, and restrict it to our program advisors, because these are the interactive part of our company with the clients. And I said, I'd be totally that they have a virtual version of myself and they can ask questions. How do you explain this? What's the best way to explain free focus and buffer days? I said, well, this is how it looks like. And according to Peter, they would constantly ask you questions and you'd be interviewed to add to the greater dimensions of what you know. And I said, well, that'd be interesting to me. I mean, that'd be interesting to me. But as you're saying, it would free me up from me too.
Yes, it would free me up to, like, I think if I had, there's so much that I have said, and that I said a lot when it was sort of newer thinking.
Yeah.
That's still very valid, but I don't spend a lot of time talking about it now because I've said so much about it in the past. There's so, especially if you could take just the transcripts of everything that I've said contextually.
Well, who would you rather spend time with, Dean?
Yeah.
somebody who's going to argue with you,
That's funny. Wouldn't it be funny? We could set up our AIs to come together and have discussions. We could talk with each other.
I told Peter he's got twin boys who are 11. Yeah. I said, why don't you get one of these for each of your kids and then have all four of them getting together.
Yeah. That's funny.
And I said, I have to tell you, Peter, I think this is going to go someplace else besides you know, where you think it's going. I think it's going to go someplace else, you know, and especially with COVID. What would COVID have been like if you had a constantly learning version of yourself during this period that you could talk to, you know?
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Or any period or any experience. Yeah. I mean, journaling is a form of this, you know, when you think about journaling, you know, people writing things down and then going back over what they wrote 10 years ago and everything else. But this is, you know, this is supercharged. This has got, this is journaling on steroids, you know, on multidimensional steroids, you know. So,
agreed.
Yeah. But I think we already, I think we've already done this. I think we already, you know, this is not brand new. We've already simulated this in some fashion with what we had available to us. And the reason why we'd want to do it is because we liked it in a very primitive form and we'd like it in a more advanced form.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's all exciting times here in Cloudlandia.
Now, did you have any notion at 5 minutes before this call started that we would go
not at all
any of the places we did? Not at all. And that kind of proves the point.
Not at all. But it was quite enjoyable.
Yeah, me too. Next week.
Yes, I will be here.
I will be here.
Perfect. I will talk to you then.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.